grateful to be alive and sober and at a meeting. Very grateful for this gift of sobriety. And first things first, thank the committee and Glenn for this very kind invitation to all of us to be here this weekend. We okay now? Good. Okay. Very grateful to be alive and sober part of this weekend. I can tell you from my experience in doing deals like this that this has just been an invitation extended by your spirit to mine. And when that happens, we commence shoulder to shoulder upon this common journey and walk this path of a solution that takes us to a God of our understanding. And when that happens, when that spiritual experience happens, great things happen to me within. So I'm very grateful for this gift called sobriety and have been brought to a place called recovered. Really neat deal to be here with Chris and Myers. Again, we've gotten to do a couple of things like this. And there was a time in my life where, you know, it wasn't about getting invited anywhere. In fact, if I did, they didn't call you back. And so this is a pretty neat deal to meet some newfound friends and see a lot of friends that I know from Jersey and back home. So I feel really privileged and blessed to be a part of this weekend. And over this weekend, we're going to be doing a lot of things, talking about carrying this message, our primary purpose, our singleness of purpose. And what I ask all of you is to have an open mind, because what will happen most often is that ego will get in the way and you'll experience ego through resistance to something new that you hear. And you'll look at it and say, or you'll hear it and say, hey, you know what? I never did it this way. And you'll automatically shut down and look for the exit, because maybe it's a different approach, a different angle, a different journey. And so when that happens, please use the word awareness. Work with awareness over the weekend. Be aware of what's going on within as you hear messages from outside. It's real easy to shut down and then experience some contempt, pride, or investigation on something new. And that's just taking a look at old belief systems and attachments that we all acquire being here a while. So what I work with is awareness, watch, observe, turn, words like this that keeps me here when I attend these things or I do these deals and listen to other speakers. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988, and I'm here tonight recovered, and I'm very blessed to be brought to that place. That shift in consciousness happened for me. It was done for me by my loving God. I couldn't will myself into waking up. I couldn't will myself into having a spiritual experience. But what was presented to me was a lot of information from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And little by slowly, I was taken. I was brought to a place. And even during that time, even during that journey, I would experience some contemporary investigation on a lot of new things I would hear. And the really neat thing that's happened to me along this path and going through the work a few times is I've been made little by slowly open. Open to new information. Lots of information I work with today is along with Alcoholics Anonymous and my big book, Not Instead Of. Another mantra I work with is that I get to do this stuff. I don't have to do an inventory. I don't have to sit in prayer and meditation. But what I work with is I get to do this. Great stuff. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And as a friend of mine says, I'm very grateful for that, and so are a lot of other people who knew me when I was drinking. My home group is a Way Out group. We're located in Staten Island. We meet Sunday nights at 6:45 at a place called Traditions House, Mount Loretta. And we are a solution-based group, and most people in Staten Island do not like us until they hit a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then they come looking for us. Because as you know, if you're walking around in your little AA neighborhood with a big book on your arm sharing your experience with this information, you will catch resistance. But what else can we do? Deny the spirit of who's given us truth and water down what's been so freely given to us, and then we get drunk. So sometimes we catch resistance. And before I get into this pitch, one of the things that has been so valuable, so vital to me has been this. I seek today experience, and I can't stress this enough. Seek experience. The information in the book, I knew lots of people who have read this book and never had an experience. But seek experience. I'm no longer a seeker of belief or faith. I seek experience. And when I have an experience with my God, with the information in the book, the faith and the belief is taken care of. Seek experience. to the weak and seek experience, even when that contempt arises within. And it will. Trust me, it will. It may even start it already since I said my name. I don't know. Another New Yorker at the podium. Here we go. I shook hands with a few guys and they checked the jewelry on their hand. I don't know what that was. But seek experience. I got sober in Brooklyn, Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, where we share the only requirement for membership in Brooklyn was a pinky ring, sunglasses, and gold jewelry. Over there, they changed how it works into how you're doing, and there were guys in my home group who thought The Godfather was an educational movie when I showed up. And I know Mike loves this story, and I need to share it because he threatened my life if I don't. The type of people God put my path when I first showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I showed up at the Free Spirit Group, my first home group in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and these guys, these old-timers, were planning one of these AA fellowship outing kind of deals, and they decided to go fishing this day. And five guys from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn decided to go fishing. And so how do five guys from Brooklyn get dressed to go fishing? Like I am tonight. And I mean, we were on the boat 5 minutes, and they were complaining because the shoes were getting wet. And I mean, these are the type of guys, if you yelled out, "Hey, land ho," they would say, "Don't talk about my mother." These were the spiritual gurus God put in my path. And anyway, we set sail, and we're out on the water a couple of hours, and we're catching nothing but coals. And finally, Sally Boy, a friend of mine, had the reel in the water, and he grabs something, and he starts pulling on it to bring it aboard, and it's getting heavier and heavier. And then being from Brooklyn, we're thinking maybe it's someone from the neighborhood. We thought it was on a long vacation. And anyway, this little fish gets on board. It was about so big, and it's flipping and flapping from side to side, and they start throwing punches at it and kicks at it. I'm starting to cry because I was feeling a little spiritual. And so finally, Sally gets this fish and goes to stick his head underwater, and I yell out, "Sally, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm going to drown him." I swear that's a true story, man. And I had the nerve to tell you I'm recovered. But this is what God put in my life, and that was my home group. Business meetings there, I found out if you say you love everybody in AA, you're not making enough business meetings. A little slow at the draw, guys. Come on. But this was home for me. This was my home group. And with all of that, I switched home groups a couple of years ago and officially made a way out my home group less than a year ago. But all of that stuff that went on back then, God put terrific people in my path. People who showed up with a message that I needed to hear at that particular time. And there were some great teachers, some great spiritual leaders in my home group that were put in my path. And that, they may have been there way before, because I used to show up that group drunk many times and I never heard it. And then God's timing, as you know, is perfect. And I showed up in 1988 at the Free Spirit Group, and God put a great teacher in my life back then, as he did a couple of years ago once again. So before I get going, let me tell you, if you're without a sponsor or you're struggling with a sponsor and you're not really sure who to approach, a book says, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. And what I tell you to do here is turn to prayer and ask your God, show me a teacher. I promise you, one's already out there. And you will meet him or her. And you will commence shoulder to shoulder this common journey, and you will watch things happen within that is indeed the miraculous. And this I tell you experientially. This will happen to you. This is the great news this book carries, and hopefully the three of us can present to you this weekend experientially what we have done. I mean, I can read this book to you, like a lot of meetings. You go to big book meetings, they read the book, and there's no solution. I hope to do some reading, but I think it's always so much more important to share with you experience. I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. And I will tell you this, I invite you into my life. I fall short in thought, word, and deed every day, some days more than others. But overall, God has moved me to a place beyond my wildest dreams when I got here in 1988. I was not planning on doing one of these deals in 1988. Or even getting to a place that my book promises me of being recovered. But 1988, I was brought here after seven rehabs, dying of alcoholism, literally dying. I was at death's door in 19. I was in serious trouble. I will never be as old as the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And then God put people in my path, as he still does. A couple of years ago, I was praying for a new teacher. Father, please, I need a new teacher. And a gentleman from Texas was put in my path, and my life was completely revolutionized once again. Ain't that neat? There was a time when all I can do was think about a drink. In Alcoholics Anonymous, separated 6 months, I was in this place called Obsession. What kept me from drinking was grace. Not me, not making meetings, not making coffee, was grace. And after 6 months, a great teacher was put in my path. And I began. I was brought home to my group, the Free Spirit Group, and another teacher was put in my path. Pretty neat what goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous. How we're resurrected, really resurrected. Book says we're reborn. And that's exactly what happens by this power we call God. And I'll tell you this, from my experience, all I get to do here, all the meetings I make, all the service I'm allowed to do, all the study and work I do with the book and working with others, all of it, I can tell you from experience, our point is to a power greater than myself. This whole deal for me is about pointers to God. They take me to this power, so I get integrated with this power. I become one with this power. We have a circle and a triangle. I'm living on all three sides. I become part of that whole, integrated with this power. There's no beginning, no end. There isn't, well, this is service, and this is a fellowship, and this is recovery. It's all one. It all becomes one. Fellowship, service, and recovery all becomes one. No beginning, no end. I'm here, awake, present, and present. There's no duality. Well, this is spiritual, and that isn't. A great teacher has shown me this. It's all one. It's who I be. And that is done by a loving God that I need to have an experience with and not just talk about. Because I can go, I was brought from, you know, language of knowledge to language of experience. And then when the spirit wakes up, it becomes language of the heart. Because that God wants to get another drunk sober. And he uses us. Page 68 in our book says, God will demonstrate through me and you what he can do. Language of knowledge, language of experience, language of the heart. And then we get another drunk and pull them through the archway where we walk free. And our book uses great words, at last. Many times out there and in here, I thought I was getting free. I thought I was free until I went through this work and it showed me great words, at last. Meaning anything prior to that, I thought I was free. It was delusional. I was never free, ever. The right relationship, pocket full of money, the right job. Well, this is good. I'm feeling pretty good. Pray to my emotions. Pray to manageability. Never free. Take this path and I get free at last. And then I have a function to grow in understanding and effectiveness to continue having an experience with this power, because that's all that's keeping me sober. And if you experience freedom tonight because of results of working with our big book, I can share with you that you can get freer. Which brings me to amends. How are we doing on amends? Are we out making amends? Do we think amends has anything to do with me drinking or not? Finishing my amends, what's that about? How am I doing in that area? One of the things I hope to talk about over the weekend also is new concepts, new ideas that I've been able to have experiences with. Because what a great sponsor will do is challenge every belief system you show up at his doorstep with. As my sponsor did with me, challenge every belief system. And it was uncomfortable. Waking up is not comfortable. Going through that archway that God has built for us is not comfortable. We get squeezed going through the archway. It's about removal, removal, removal of concepts, belief systems, ideas, prejudices. All of it has to go. But we stand before our Creator with absolutely nothing. Blessed are the poor in spirit, because the kingdom of heaven is theirs, is what the carpenter said. And I had no idea what those words meant until I studied them. Everything was removed, and I stood before my God with nothing. And when that day happened, it was indeed miraculous. And you know, our book says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. When God shows up, God shows up. And it's profound, it's mood-changing, it's life-changing. It's indeed the miraculous. When that happens, and I could be driving in my car, just finishing up some step work, I can be anywhere, because God doesn't make conditions on that stuff. I'm awake, and it's profound. What I was guilty of is resting on laurels over the years. because yesterday was such a terrific day, I don't need to go to any lengths today. And it's real easy for me to get into replaying an old experience that I had 5 years ago currently. And so my job continued to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Things I never, ever even heard of, let alone comprehend when I got here in 1988, after 7 rehabs and being in jail and being homeless and doing the things that I did at the price of a drink. 1988, I got here and my life was revolutionized. My life also changed on my first drunk when I was about 14 years old. I had a life-changing experience on my first drunk. My first drunk brought me awake to the present moment. I didn't plan on that either. I was a type of kid growing up where I was driven by 100 forms of fear. There was no connection with God. I had lost my mom 6 months prior to this first drunk at the hands of alcoholism, and me and this power, I believe, at that point was separated. Not that I could push God away. I'm not a God stronger than God, but I shut down. I fell asleep to this power. It was January 23rd, and I remember my mom died because of this illness. And 6 months later, I'm leveled, completely leveled. My legs were taken out from under me, and I had no idea which end was up. And my friends were drinking cold 45 beer in a corner over in Brooklyn, 75th Street and 20th Avenue. There was a church feast happening across the street from this this church called St. Dominic's Church, and they were passing around a quart of cold 45 beer. And I wanted so desperately what they had. They were joyous, happy, and free drinking beer. And they were roughhousing and talking to the girls and doing a lot of things that I always dreamt about doing, just being a part of. The way we're gathered here tonight, back then I'd be in the back or in the last row, wanting to sit up here and be a part of the mainstream, and I just could never pull it off. A few times I did try to pack into the mainstream with my friends, and what I would get was that judge screaming in my head, "What a loser you are." I mean, I was the type of guy, if you asked me what my name was, I had to, let me come up with the right answer so you like me. And I could hear myself talking, I would hear my heart beating, I could feel the sweat coming off my forehead. And that was just being around you, let alone converse a little bit and interact. Driven by 100 forms of fear, the judge had a field day with me. And there was another part of me that believed everything this voice screamed at me. It was never kind, never kind. I fall short today, but what I really strive to do with a whole lot of disciplines is really pay no attention to my mind, and trust me, at times I'm prey to it. But my disciplines have taken me to a place of no mind, I experience peace. No mind, I experience bliss. When I'm in my mind, I am serious trouble. Many times we'll hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, geez, I'm acting out, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm completely out of my mind. And what I have found out is, no, if you were out of your mind, you'd be doing great. It's when we're in our mind and consumed is that we're in trouble. And I can tell you that from my own experience. But this Saturday night, my friends were drinking cold 45 beer, and they were passing a quart around, and I wanted to desperately get in there and drink with them. And I remember thinking two thoughts. My dad, who was cunning, baffling, and powerful, I was scared to death of him possibly showing up and seeing me drinking on the corner. And I knew if he caught me drinking beer on the corner after many stern warnings, I would catch hell from him. And I didn't want that. That was coupled with another thought, that if he doesn't drive up, I know the cops are going to show up, and I'm going to get in worse trouble with them, and I wanted no part of them. And I was somewhat reluctant. But till this moment, I don't know why, I put my hand in there, I grabbed the cord, I took a few pops, it went down, and you know what? Nothing happened to me. I didn't even feel the beer. My dad didn't drive up, nor did the cops. Everything was as it was. On that, I drank a little bit more. And as I continued to drink cold 45 beers, something happened to me that I never experienced before. And I got to a place out there that was different than before I picked up a drink. The fear that I was experiencing little by slowly was getting removed. That self-centeredness, that self-conscious, worry about everything I said was getting removed. As I continued to drink, I remember the pain of losing my mom was removed. The fear of my dad and the police were removed. The fear of interacting with people was removed. Alcohol was doing its job for me. And it was many, many years that alcohol was not a problem, was a solution to my bedevilments. It worked. It was a solution to me. And as I continued to drink, I started to roughhouse and talk to the girls, and I was part of life at last, as Bill says in his story, great words, I had arrived. And as I continued to drink Colt 45 beer, I arrived. This was a great thing. Why'd I wait so long to experience this bliss? Awake to the present moment, drinking Colt 45 beer was a solution for me. And I remember thinking when the following week rolled around that I wanted to capture that elusive feeling once more. I wanted to get to that place out there where I was not troubled with inner turmoil anymore, because Colt 45 beer was going to take me out there. The following week rolled around and I got fired up, and it did. It did its job. A little bit different, but it did its job. And I was a weekend drinker for a long time. And then little by slowly, I started to make Friday night my drinking night, then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then I started to drink during the week. I remember my hero went from like Mickey Mantle to Keith Richards. So my perceptions were starting to shift already. What makes me an alcoholic? I was experiencing it back then, but I wasn't awake to it. I was in a state of obsession back then. I was already experiencing a phenomenon called craving, this allergy that when I drank, the allergy was always intensified, never satisfied. And I suffered from another thing called a spiritual malady, which many people out there suffer from. But I have something else, the obsession and compulsion when it comes to booze. And I was off to the races, and I had no idea when I was going to stop. As I continued to drink regularly during the week, I started to experience some consequences because of my drinking. Little things like missing curfew. My dad would tell me to get home at a certain time. That went out the window because drink was more important. Stern warnings from my dad out the window because drinking was more important. And a book talks about the emotional pill will seldom suffice. I experienced that. If you love us, you'll stop drinking. This is going to happen too if you stop drinking, all out the window. And the consequences start to go from my dad giving me these stern warnings to me starting to steal from my family. Because I would wake up in the morning, as Bill says in his story, when the morning terror and madness were on him, guess what? It was barking at me. And I needed money to go get fired up. And so what do? If you're anything like me, you steal from people who love you. Well, you know the consequences can't be that severe. So I would steal from my family, my loving family, who would leave money and jewelry laying around the house, figuring it's safe, right? Wrong if I'm in the house. So I would go and take some money that didn't belong to me or some jewelry that didn't belong to me. And then one day I woke up and I couldn't find anything except my dad's checkbook. And I had a brainstorm. If I forge his name and fill out the check, I can go to bodega or the liquor store and cash and get fired up. And I did that a couple of times. And then he got something back in the mail called a checking statement. When I came back to him, he came looking for me. And he caught me on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And this I remember like it was yesterday. I was sitting in a car next to someone I was dating at the time. And he jumped out of the car and walked across the street. And I left her in the car and ran away. And he says, you deal with him. I'm leaving. And he caught me. And I did a lot of the fake tears. Crying. It's the guys in the neighborhood. It's her. Blaming a lot of external conditions on my internal problem. And he wasn't buying any of it. And I went away to my first rehab. And what I did in this place was a lot of the push-ups and sit-ups that I was able to do. They took me to the gym. I was eating great. I was sleeping great. There was no problems. I hadn't conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I got caught. And I didn't want to catch the wrath of my dad. So I'll go to rehab like he says I should go. And 28 days passed. I came out. I had someone meet me at the door with a bottle. We cracked the seal. I drank, and I was right back in the same vicious cycle again, not thinking I had a problem with alcohol. This went on endlessly, and there were many, as Bill says, unhappy scenes in my house. The arguing got worse, and I started to, as I look back on it in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can see how my drinking directly affected others. My alcoholism was making other people sick in my family, and they didn't do anything. They were prey to misery and depression. They were experiencing the bedevilments on page 52 and the hideous four horsemen, and they didn't do anything. It was because alcoholism was owning me and now them. So how could I come to a meeting and tell someone, if you didn't drink today, you're a winner because that's all you need to be doing? Because what about the people whose lives I wrecked on my way in here? Isn't it selfish and arrogant of me to say, if you didn't drink today, it's all you really need to do? Just don't drink and go to meetings? If I had the power to do that, why would I be here? I'd stay home and not drink. The first time alcohol bit me, I said, too hot, I'm not going back anymore. And that ruffles a lot of feathers at contemporary AA meetings. But I can only share with you my experience. family afterwards says, years of living with an alcoholic can make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. My family sat by and tried to support me, tried to do anything to raise the bottom, anything for me to see truth, and all they kept hitting with was alcoholism. All the lies, all the torment, over and over and over again. And I thought at one point that they were the sick ones and I was okay. And I, little by slowly, I hit my second rehab, I hit my third rehab, I hit my fourth rehab. I never forget, by the time I hit my fifth rehab, I had gotten a job as a longshoreman on the Brooklyn waterfront. Not the training ground for spiritual growth, trust me. These guys are fed up with the day at sunrise and like I show up. And, you know, I brought my alcoholism into that environment. My dad had this impeccable reputation, and then I start to go to work for him, and he start to experience a lot of things that he had no right to experience. For example, me borrowing money from people I shouldn't be in the same neighborhood with for a drink. Doing a lot of illegal things for a drink. Becoming a terrible worker for a drink. Alcohol owned me. And so lunchtime would come, and I'd take lunch for 3 days looking for my check. And my dad would send out people looking for me, and he would get me out of scrape after scrape after scrape. And he started to lose sleep, and my kid brothers would start to lose sleep, and my uncles would start to lose sleep, and my grandparents would start to lose sleep, all because of alcoholism and what it was doing to me and my life and theirs. So when I came in here, great teachers told me, I need to go back now and fix that and make it right and go to any lengths to make that right. My big book tells me a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our homes, occupations, and affairs. How am I doing with that? I hit my fifth rehab, and I remember I got bounced off the waterfront, and my dad showed up, as always, like the cavalry. And he got me this little apartment over in Brooklyn, this little studio apartment, and he was going to get my job back. And the idea was I was going to meet the right person, and all of this stuff was going to go away. I was going to be employed again and change my ways. And hoping that the right person in my life would help me change my ways, not knowing that no human power could relieve me of alcoholism. And so I get this little apartment, and in a few months I was bounced out of there. And I was thrown off the waterfront once again. I had brought, many of us talk about bringing the Bowery into our living room, and I had like the Lower East Side in living in this place. It was a horror show. I brought all of it into this place, and when I moved in there, it was certainly livable. As I continued to get sicker and sicker at the hands of alcoholism, things that are very important to me today weren't even a thought. Bathing was the last thing on my mind. Drinking was always the first thing on my mind. I lived in a place when I moved in was livable, and at the end, I wouldn't send my worst enemy in there. I had a bed that was soiled because I didn't make it to the bathroom. There were no clean sheets and covers like I sleep now. It was just a mattress that was soiled because I wasn't making it to the bathroom at night. I didn't care. I would hear things and see things. It was horror. There was garbage all over the place. I got addicted to some other things, and I lived for the next drink. Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy was my God, and it told me when to do everything. Collapse and come to. Collapse and come to. Pass out and come to. And that's how I lived. I was existing. And after a short time, I got bounced out of this apartment for the obvious, not paying rent and turning it into what I turned it into. And I had to go live on the streets for a while, and I spent about a day and a half in my sixth rehab. And I had to sign myself out because the obsession to drink alcohol had brought me to a place where no human power was going to stop me. The obsession to drink alcohol took me to a place if there was a crack in the wall I was going through. And deep down in here, I knew I was probably going to die, but I had to go drink anyway. And counselors pleaded with me, Peter, don't leave because you're going to die. But I had to go. That fifth rehab I talked to you about, I was in this place for 9 weeks. I was physically separated from alcohol for 9 weeks. I got out on a Saturday. I was drunk on a Monday. And what I've come to tell you is that being separated from alcohol, excuse me, has very little to do with being a recovered alcoholic. It just meant I was separated. And how many times in contemporary AA do we hear that separated, being separated from alcohol is enough? That's the whole deal. For me, it wasn't. For others, it may be. For me, it wasn't. Because alcohol was taken out of my life many times, only to go back again. In 1988, God, in His infinite mercy, separated me. God separated me, has kept me separated. That's why I will never say I quit drinking, I stopped drinking. That implies self-will. I tried that and kept getting drunk. And when God separated me in 1988, I've been separated since. So I won't turn like a miracle of God into a personal accomplishment and say, you know, June 23rd, 1988, I quit drinking. I put the plug in the jug. Many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll hear AA members, bless them, I have a choice today. I have a choice whether I drink or not. Well, then you're not like me. Because the thing that I always thought about was, if you have choice in here now, what happened to choice when you were out there ripping up your life and everyone else's? Choice didn't exist? And suddenly it showed up? As a real alcoholic, the guy on page 21, I have no power, choice, and control. I have no input into the decision that's made for me by something called alcoholism. And I don't even know when that's going to show up. I do know my job is to continue to grow along this path and seek this power and stay away from, stay separated from this drink. I hit the streets after my sixth rehab and really quick. And a short time later, I was in a hallway. And I remember making a sincere plea to this God, if you're out there. And he listened, and he brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. What's really interesting, a few months before that, I wound up outside the Port Authority in Manhattan. And I don't know till this moment how I got there or what happened afterwards, but I was served with truth, this little awakening, this opening, where we're kind of struck sober for a moment. And it was that flimsy reed our book talks about that proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God. And in that moment, I knew what I turned into. I could not deny it. Truth was served to me. And I remember thinking of my mom, who I had lost, and my dad and my kid brothers, who I hadn't seen for quite some time. And I was in this place of complete despair. And what I did with that was curse God for taking me there and taking everyone else away from me. And I had a serious problem with God, the conception of God, the idea of God. You mentioned God, and I bristled with antagonism. Didn't want to know about it, because he was the reason I turned out the way I did. I'm in this hallway, and God didn't judge. But what he did was, in this hallway, serve me truth again. And at that moment, I remember, if you're out there, please take me from this scrap heap. And I was not thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous or making meetings, anything to do with this sacred place. I just didn't want to die in this hallway. Father, please take me from here. I remember going to the phone to call up my dad, collect, because I had no money. And every time I went to dial the phone, collect, I'd break down in tears and hang up the phone. And my dad was out in Atlantic City gambling with his wife, and he had this feeling in his gut that I was in trouble. And he left there, and he came looking for me. But he didn't come looking for me like he did when I stole from him. And that was proof when he showed up and met me over in Brooklyn. We hear in AA how God works through people. And I have come to find out, even currently, it isn't people only in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's people. God's not going to discriminate that. And for me, it was my dad, because if it wasn't the courage, strength, and direction that a loving God gave him, you have a different speaker doing this pitch tonight. He kept me live long enough to get to you guys. And my dad caught me he over in Brooklyn. And I remember, I never forget this, he got out of the car and he called my name and he came walking across the street. And there was a different mannerism about him this night. I was standing there with bloodstained, dirty clothes, and I was in the street. And he came across and I said, Dad, I'm okay, don't worry about it. And I remember collapsing into this man's arms, and I remember this very clearly, how he held on to me and telling me I was going to be okay. And a short time later, I was off to, God willing, my seventh and last rehab. And I was in this place about 10 days or so, and the insidious insanity of the first drink was galloping back. Page 24 talks about how we really can't think the drink through. I've been told many times, think the drink through. And when I take a look at page 24, it shoots that one to hell. I was in this place where if my dad didn't show up, I was probably going to drink and die. And I get put in my seventh rehab, and 10 days later, I'm looking to go drink again. Looking to go drink again a different way, with different people, something. And God in his infinite mercy sent me off to Minnesota. And people out there disturbed me many times on a question of alcoholism. They presented me with truth over and over and over again. They disturbed me many times. They told me I was suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer. That this whole deal is about getting right with a God of your understanding. No one else is yours. Well, what an order. I can't go through with it. And they told me, you can. God will move you. I lived in Minnesota for about 10 months, and I was brought home to the Free Spirit Group, and a great teacher was put in my path, and we began this journey through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I will tell you, I was in AA for 6 months and running around in here untreated, acting like a drunk without a drink in me, and my behavior resembled that. A lot of ugly things I did without alcohol in me, separated, acting like a drunk without a drink in me. December 22nd, 1988, I was driving in Minneapolis, and I wanted to drink. I was going to go drink because the pain of being separated from alcohol was greater than what I ever suffered. It was terrible for me, and there was no more medicine. And I said, well, I'm going to go get drunk. I can't deal with this anymore. I need to go get fired up. I don't know what moved me to make a prayer, but I did, and I showed up at this gentleman's doorstep, and he asked me questions I'll hold on to forever. He says, where are you with God in the 12 steps? He says, when do you start the steps? He says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. And he disturbed me. I began a journey with this man, and I came home to the Free Spirit Group. And my first sponsor started walking me through the steps. And it was about cleaning house and getting rid of the obstacles in my path that were blocking me from having an experience with this power. And then going out and make amends for the harms I've caused. And then working with some disciplines in 10 and 11. And my life was completely revolutionized, completely changed because of what I was given here. By loving people. A couple of years ago, I started to experience something I never thought I would experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was what my sponsor called flatlining. I was working with disciplines, I was praying and meditating, I couldn't get out of this place I was, and I was starting to experience a lot of current agnosticism, I was driven by fear, a lot of things were going on, all within, and fearful to talk to anyone about it. Except God, and a new teacher showed up, and I went through this work again, and I was one of those guys who had contempt prior investigation about continually reworking these steps. And then pain moved me, and fear moved me to a place of doing it. What a great experience. We have two other really neat speakers, so I'll just wrap this up and tell you that because of what's been given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, my life has been reassembled. My family and I, our roots grasp new soil. This past year, my personal life, year and a half, has been a huge, spectacular upheaval. I went through a whole lot of things within 20 minutes that most people would probably get drunk off of out there. And I had very, very dark and lonely nights over being unemployed, having to leave my house, going through a divorce, having a lot of things taken from me that I worked so hard to achieve. And I get laid off in the same week. And there was only one place I can turn to, and that was my loving God for strength and direction. And he allowed me to put one foot in front of the other. And what happened out of that was I was able to meet terrific people and have terrific experiences. As difficult as my external world is right now, my life is just in really neat shape because of some wonderful people like sponsors. My friend Linda, my girlfriend Linda is here with me, gets to travel with me wherever I go. Myers and Chris and just a whole lot of people. God has done for me here what I can never do for myself. I've had terrific experiences with meditation that have really transformed my life. Many meditations. And I would have missed that if I didn't have teachers show me. When I was about 3 years old, my mom had a nervous breakdown. She was suffering from alcoholism and she collapsed in the streets in South Brooklyn. And I remember watching this whole event take place, frozen, literally frozen with fear, not knowing what to do, watching my mom collapse. And I remember the ambulance and the police showing up in the crowd of people and them taking her away and a gentleman covering my eyes and taking me away. And next time I saw my mom was on a hospital gurney, get strapped down, and me being frozen with fear. And that image stood with me. And I can never erase it. And I remember talking to my old sponsor, and I need to maybe go revisit South Brooklyn. I don't know why, but he says, don't go there. Well, I'm working with meditations. I was working with three meditations a day, and one was a religious practice, and I'm in this practice, and out of this comes what I see in my meditation, what appeared to be a statue. And I couldn't make out what it was, and as each day moved, this vision came clearer and clearer. And this woman was holding a baby. And I was told in this meditation, go back to South Brooklyn and visit that spot. It was made abundantly clear to me. in this experience, in where I come from, I was experienced a scent of roses, which my sponsor told me was very profound. Not to talk the spirits away, but connect the dots. Well, he went back to Texas, and it was a gentleman from California was in town, and I says, Joe, I'm having this experience. He says, we'll go Saturday. We're going. And on the way there, he talked to me about maybe cleaning up some things with my mom and amends, almost like a graveside amends. And so we went, and we headed down to South Brooklyn. Out of this meditation experience, I go to South Brooklyn with Joe. And I get out of the car, and I'm walking around, and I stood in a spot, I'll never forget this, that I wasn't 6 inches to the left or to the right of where I stood over 40 years ago. It was there, and I can feel the energy. I remember kneeling down to this little kid who was me and letting him know you did nothing wrong. Because for years I walked with this burden. I could have done something to prevent her from dying or experiencing these horrific consequences because of alcoholism. I walked with that for years through outside help and in here. It was this thing that was living in here. And I remember getting moved to walk over to this wall where she was punching. And I remember her hand was all bloody and stuff. And she was punching this wall. And I put my hand on this wall and I made a prayer to my God and to my mom. And I was instructed about making some amends, and I had a little talk with my mom, and I remember getting somewhat emotional and coming back to this spot and standing there once again and putting closure on this. And I went to go get back into my car, and it was as if something stopped me. I couldn't get into my car no matter how much I wanted to, and I let Joe know. I said, Joe, I can't leave. He said, how come? I said, I can't leave this kid behind, and something is stopping me from getting in there. So he got out of the car and he said, well, we've got to do something about this. And I was instructed to make some prayer, and I did. And now this is South Brooklyn. This area is Red Hook, Brooklyn. It's a little bit rough, and I'm on my knees praying in the middle of the street, and people looking out their windows like, who are these two maniacs, you know? Joe's very intuitive and very gifted, and he's walking around looking for different things, and he tells me, taps me on the shoulder, and he says, you better look on the concrete there. And I said, how come? He's just, look, I have two brothers, John and Anthony. Anthony was not yet born. And when this incident took place when I was 3, John was a newborn. And what was written in the concrete was to Peter and Johnny with love and 3 little X's underneath it. That was written in the concrete. Now, that could have been written from anyone in that neighborhood. But I can tell you this from my heart, that based on all the experiences I've had in here that you have given me, that God has given me, and listening to your experiences, I know where that came from. Here's the deal. What freedom when you get into a place where you know God knows you. Because I prayed for a long time to this God, does he really know all about me? Does he hear my heart? Does he hear my soul? Does he know when I'm crying? I'm praying, but does he really know what's going on within? And then I have an experience like this, and then I was convinced that my God knows me, Pete Marinelli, with all the falling short I do, with all the things I do that I fall short in thought, word, and deed, and all the accomplishments I'm able to do in Alcoholics Anonymous and in my personal life. God shows up and doesn't make too hard terms for anyone. What a good deal. Because based on my track record, I know where I'm supposed to be tonight. I got a really good idea where I'm supposed to be tonight. Not standing here tonight before you with dignity. Not standing before you with the woman I love. Not standing with a couple of good friends of mine. Not standing looking at Mike and Kathy and Bill who've been on part of this journey with me. Not supposed to be here. I get into my bed most nights and I hold my pillow a little tight because I know what it could be like and what I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. My hope is to stay teachable and pass this on with the same love and gratitude that was given to me, even when I disturb a few. Thank you.